Boker Tov, everybody. Tzoraim Tovim, those in Israel. And okay, class number 28 in our class on the Siddur. And Rabbi Liebtag keeps asking me, are you at Ashrei yet? Shmon Esrei yet? Shma yet? I said, no. We go, move, nice and slowly. Okay, today, please God, because it's sort of the end of this, whatever you want to call it, before Pesach. So I do hope to finish Eizim Koman, which ends with the Korban Pesach. So I think it's actually a perfect ending. We'll actually begin towards the beginning. We'll talk on the Korban Pesach too. Okay, so I just want to pick up on the two questions I think I was asked last week. The first question, I think, Zev, you asked the question on the blood, right? Does all the blood in the Beit HaMikdash and the clothes of the Kohanim get all stained and dirty? And we know this, we said by the Trumat HaDeshem, when they move the ashes, the Torah says they have to put on special clothes, on not so fancy, like unfancy clothes, because they don't want to get ashes and dirt and dust on their clothes. So what? So the Trumat, I asked Rabbi Gemara, Rabbi Shlomo Gemara, a number of you, he's spoken for us before, besides being a Talmud Chacham, he's a Kohen. So I figured I'd ask him as a Kohen what he thought. So he said, right away, he said he's pretty sure that they do not have to change their clothes, even if it gets, you know, bloody. If it gets torn, they would have to change it. In other words, he said, first of all, he thinks there was a Gemara that says the Kohanim were very careful. They knew how to, I mean, Kohanim's reason, we have that idea that careful. He said that included they would lift up and, you know, try not to get blood on their clothes. But it was probably next to impossible, especially the Gemara says, the Mishnah says, by the Korban Pesach, that was probably the busiest day of the year. The busiest day, because every family had to bring, that's the only time of the year that every Jew has to bring a sacrifice. The normal daily sacrifice is one sacrifice for the whole people, two sheep, okay. Two sheep in the morning, two in the afternoon, great. So four sheep for the whole people, big deal. But on the Korban Pesach, so not every single Jew, because you can have 25 people or 50 people eating from one lamb, but every 50 people have to bring. So even if that's only a million people, and it's more than a million people, let's say it's only a million, let's say 50 people, probably most of them are less than 50 people. You're talking a minimum of 20,000, probably more than 20. There are probably, I know the historians write about this. I think Jonathan Sachs in the beginning of his Machzor talk, I don't know, that was maybe Yom Kippur, the scene in the Beit HaMikdash, Erev Pesach, thousands and thousands, hundreds of thousands of people coming. So the Mishnah says there was so much blood on the floor of the temple floor. And it says to Kohanim, when it happened on, I think it was on Shabbos, because we know you can shech the Korban Pesach. That's how Hillel became the Nasi, because one year Erev Pesach was on Shabbos, like it was last year. They tried to avoid it and the people didn't know. Can you bring the Korban Pesach? Because it's a personal Korban, sort of, right? A communal Korban, of course, the regular Korban of Musaf, Korban Shabbos. We have extra Korbanas on Shabbos. And that's because it's the whole community. But the Korban Pesach, it's not exactly a personal, sort of in between. But it's more or less a personal Korban. So maybe that you can't bring on Shabbos. Nobody knew what to do. So Hillel said, no, he had a tradition from Shmai of Talion, B'moado, that in its time, just like on Shabbat, you bring the Moedon, it's so too on Erev Pesach, even on Shabbat, you bring the Korbans. And he was very upset that the people didn't know. Fine. So then, so there was so much blood, they used to sweep. The Kohanim used to sweep the blood off the floor of the Beit HaMikdash. And the Mishnah says, Shelo Birtzon Chachamim. Very interesting. The rabbis opposed that. The Kohanim wanted to keep the temple clean, and the rabbi said, no, you'll clean up later. But it's just in the Mishnah, Shelo Birtzon Chachamim. We have that actually in Psachim. The fourth chapter discusses like three things that people in Yericho did that the rabbis didn't protest. It means they didn't like it, but they didn't protest. Three things they protested. And the next mission is three things Chizkiyahu did. And the rabbi said, great, great move, Chizkiyahu. And then three things Chizkiyahu did. The rabbi said, Chizkiyahu, that wasn't very good. So we're not going to go into that now, but let's say one of them was he closed up the water, the Megichona for Ashur. And the war, he cut off the water supplies for the enemy. The Gemara, the Mishnah, can't do that. Satame, and whatever. So the Mishnah lists off. So we have a few things. The Mishnah would say people would do things. We know we're not the first generation not to listen to what the rabbi says necessarily. The rabbi says, very nice. If the people like what the rabbi says, they listen. They don't like, they find an excuse not to listen. That's the way it goes. Pesach people like to listen. My daughter, if you're teaching us, all the chumras for Pesach, all the new things. It's interesting to hear. I never heard of these things. But okay, people like to be strict on Pesach, Gesundheit. Okay, very nice. So that's the first thing. With the blood, we don't have to, apparently the Kohanim do not have to worry about it. And I would say, philosophically, it means that's part of the service. In other words, obviously at night, the next day, they can't come in blood-stained clothes. But the blood is actually, it's like lahavdil, a baseball player. Today's opening day, right? In baseball season, right? The blue, I don't know why they play at night. I thought opening day, you're supposed to play in the daytime. I think the Blue Jays are playing here tonight, opening season. They finished the strike. So, you know, the baseball player, if his uniform isn't dirty, like he hasn't had such a great day. Well, why didn't he slide into second base? Maybe he would have gotten the stolen base instead of being tagged out. So there is something to be said for a uniform to get dirty. It shows you're really working hard. So perhaps it's the same idea that the Kohen, even though there's blood is like splattered all over him, that's actually great, not a bad thing. Okay, that's A. B, more what I'm more into, and I did more myself, and I didn't just ask Rabbi Gemara, is the second question that I think iPad mentioned last week, that we were talking about, though, that's what we're going to pick up today, the Korban Olavi Oreid, the Korban that goes up and down, Olavi Oreid, depending on how wealthy you are. It's an amazing thing. So we have this in five places where we'll get there soon, that the Korban, if you're wealthy, you give X, and if you're less wealthy, you give Y. And in three of those five, if you're less wealthy, if you're poor, you give Z, or no, X, Y, W, you give X, Y, and Z. And then in two of them, there's only Y and Z. Z for the Americans. Okay, Y and Z. But so one of them we discussed last week, they're both the Parsha Shavu. One's in Tazria, one's in Metzora. One is the Isha HaYoledet, a woman who gives who has a baby. So she brings two animals. She brings a Korban Chatan and a Korban Ola. Why does a woman who has a baby bring a Korban Chatan? We'll have to leave that for another time. And if she can't afford it, she brings two birds. Okay, that was last week. And then this week's Parsha, we'll see in a second, the Metzora. We have that same halacha. So iPad asked me, what about, didn't somebody bring down the price? I didn't, to make it even cheaper. So that's what I want to discuss for a few minutes. The beautiful, I think, a powerful Mishnah of Rav Moshe Ben Gamliel. So I haven't actually, I think we've shared my screen for a couple of weeks. Basically, the halacha is that every time a woman had a baby, she had to bring another animal or birds. Let's say, and the Mishnah is going to talk about birds because obviously we're talking about people who couldn't afford it. This was an economic intervention in the marketplace where we basically changed the halacha for economic reasons. So the Mishnah, let me share my screen and you can see inside. Very nice. Okay, everybody see, Isha Sheyesh Aleha, a woman had five, Safeh Chamesh Leidot. Okay, Chamesh Leidot Vada'ot. A woman had five healthy children. You had very, very often in the Mishnah, you had miscarriage. You have it a lot nowadays too. But miscarriages, and that's Aleha, when do you do a pidgin and bang? What is a miscarriage? When is she Tameh and Tahor? That's right, Tumah Tahor, as Rabbi Helfgott spoke about last week. So she had five, Baruch Hashem, healthy children. They live for 30 days. She brings one korban. So when she brings one korban, she can then eat from the korban. And she got to bring another four. You have to bring for every baby. You have to bring an extra korban. Shar lechava. She doesn't have to bring them all immediately. But when she brings one, she can now enter in the Beit HaMikdash. She can now eat kodshim. She could eat the korban Pesach. So the Mishnah then, this is a Mishnah in Kritut, where it discusses the 36 prohibitions of the Torah that you get the penalty of karet, one of which is entering the Beit HaMikdash when you are impure. That's the context really here, that a woman is impure 40 or 80 days. Rabbi Helfgott spoke about that a little last night, right after she has a child. So that's what it's doing in Masechet Kritut, because if you go to the temple and you're Tameh, that's a penalty of karet. As we're going to see, this is also not just the woman gives birth, but also entering into the temple when you are Tameh is one of the korbanot. If you did it by mistake, it's karet, so you have to bring a sin offering. So this is one of the exceptions where the Torah gives you an olavi oreid. If you can't afford it, you don't have to bring a sin offering. We'll talk about that hopefully in a few minutes. So the Mishnah says, Masa shamdu kinim bidin, Yerushalayim bidin arzahav. So it happened, the bird merchants, they could make a killing. So it was a golden dinar. How much is that? I don't know. It's a lot of money. Obviously, it's a golden dinar. There are 25 silver dinarim and a gold dinar. That was the currency of the time of the Talmud. 25 ma'ot kasef, whatever, in a dinar zahav. Amar Rav Shimon goes, Rav Shimon goes, said, this is ridiculous. Before Pesach, forget Pesach. This is, prices are insane. Like today, inflation is going nuts. Think of house pricing. No normal person can afford it. So Amar Rav Shimon ben Gamliel. Rav Shimon ben Gamliel said, it's an interesting language. I swear in the name of God, Ma'on is a place. Ma'on, the Beit HaMikdash. Ma'on is one of the names of the Beit HaMikdash. So Ma'on is, in other words, I swear to God, like in God's name, in this holy place, man. Lo alin halal. I'm not going to bed tonight. Achiyu b'dinarim. I'm not going to bed tonight until the price goes to silver dinarim. In other words, 95%. I don't know if he wants exactly 95%. It's got to go to silver dinarim. Nichnas lebeitin. So he went to the court. He went to the Beit Midrash, whatever the court, and he talked. He learned the halacha. He shashi shalav chamesh vadot vadot chamesh yivot vadot. Maybe korban achad. No. That's not bring five korbans. You only have to bring one. So he just cut the demand by 80%. I mean, it could be by 190%. The example he have in the Mishnah, five children. I don't know why they picked five. Interesting. So he brings one korban. Be'ein hashar alav chova. She doesn't have to bring the others. The Mishnah said she does. And Rabbi Shimon Gamliel said, no, she doesn't. What happened? So that day, there was such a drop in demand that the price of kinim went to Riva time. So here in the English, they say Riva time is a quarter of a silver dinar. That's an unbelievable 2/4, a half a silver dinar. That's a 1/50th of the price. There was a 98% price drop. I don't know. Maybe that people say means something else. That's like hard to imagine. I know it's exaggeration, but the prices dropped radically. Of course, the question is, it's very nice of him. How in the world could he do such a thing? You know, it says in the Torah, you have to what you have to do. How in the world was he allowed to bring to do this? So now, why is this not showing up? Maybe because our screen. Okay, no, that didn't work. Let's go to commentaries. Okay. Hold on a second. I just want to show you. Okay. How in the work? I don't know why. All right, I'll tell you if this doesn't. Mefarshim. Okay, good. Bartanura. So the Bartanura, of course, is Rav Avadjami Bartanura, 15th century Italy, the classic commentary on the Mishnah. So what does he write? Just to see it inside, because, you know, you wouldn't believe me. I mean, not that you wouldn't believe me, but to see it inside is, you know, wow. So he says like this, Afal pi shehekel b'shal Torah. Yeah, he was lenient on Torah law. Yeah, the Torah says you have to bring five. And so he said you don't have to follow the Torah. V'limei javar sheino kalacha, he taught against Jewish law. He reformed the halacha. He changed the halacha. V'limei javar sheino kalacha, he taught something that is wrong. It's against Jewish law. That doesn't matter. Mishum eit lasot l'ashem. There's a time tag for God. Sometimes, eight lasot Hashem hefer tortecha. That's why we wrote the mission in the first place. It's a very powerful idea. It's a pasuk in Tehillim. There's a time tag for God. Eight lasot Hashem, he didn't quote the heferu lahafir. They nullified your Torah. So the Gemara uses that. How could they write down the Mishnah? That's against the Torah. The Torah is a prohibition to write down the oral law. But you know, you don't write down the oral law, there won't be any law. Won't be any law. So how did Esther, if you want to take it the Midrashic way, how did Esther say fast on Pesach? You know, it's against law. You know what? You don't fast this year on Pesach. There won't be Pesach next year. There won't be a Jewish people. Sometimes you got to break the law. But what's astounding here is he broke the law for economic reasons. If it's too expensive and the merchants are charging too much, that's how the bartender explains it. He broke Torah law. Because prices are too much, you just change the law. This is an astounding Gemara. It's unbelievable. It's in the Mishnah. I don't make this up. And this is what the part in the Urah says. Yomalei came lo yimso. If he wouldn't do that, people couldn't bring their sacrifices. V'yimnu haniyot milavi, and the poor people just won't bring. They'll just, you know, I'm not going to pay for it. It's not worth it. Afilu achad, they won't even bring one. V'yachlu kochim b'tumat haguf, and then they'll start eating the. They don't want to miss the Pesach Seder. Even Jews are totally assimilated. Go to Pesach Seder. So and I'm sure that was true in the time of the temple. So they're going to eat their Paschal lamb bituma, impure, and that will be terrible. So you know what? We got to change the law. What's our basis? We don't have any basis. Just a social need that we have a verse in Tehillim that says sometimes you have to act for God. Sometimes you have to break the law to uphold the law. So that's an astounding Gemara. Okay. And then That's stop sheriff. Okay, so that's I don't know how many people have heard that Gemara before, have seen that Gemara, but it's amazing. Now let's tie this in. I'm going to share my screen again. It's Erev Pesach. That's almost there. Okay, next Friday will be Erev Pesach, but it's Erev Pesach. So now we have the same halacha in Korb. It's not quite the same extreme, and it's because it's only a rabbinic law. I don't want to say only rabbinic law. That's not nice, but it's true. Okay, rabbinic laws are less. So where are we here? Pesachim. Okay, so the Gemara says like this. We have a halacha here. We have a halacha of Chamei Shavar Lav HaPesach, right? That's one of our favorite laws, right? Yeah, everybody knows the Sobeys. I don't know what they have in New York. Is Sobeys, can you buy Chameis there? Tov, I don't even know. What's the story on Sobeys?
It's not owned by Jews anymore.
Owned by Jews anymore. It used to be owned by Jews.
Right. Miracle,
right? Steinberg's. When I was a little kid, the Steinberg's was one of the biggest supermarkets in Canada. And you, as you might have guessed, it was owned by a Jew. Steinberg in Montreal, but it was a really huge supermarket chain. So what do you do after Pesach? He doesn't sell the chametz. I remember in our area, Sunnybrook, he used to sell the chametz. There was a sign up that he sold the chametz to Rabbi Felder in Toronto. And though, of course, he kept the store open and he sold chametz anyways during Pesach. So he's a thief because it's not his chametz. Rav Moshe Feinstein has a truth about that. That it was very common. People, they weren't religious, but they want the religious customers to go. So they go to the rabbi and they sell their chametz over Pesach. But okay, but that's very nice. I sold my chametz now and they keep their store open and they keep their chametz like products. So there's that. So if you had asked me, I would have said that makes the sale a joke, and that's chametz shavar lav hapesach candy. What kind of a joke is this? Going to the whole sale of the chametz is bordering on a joke to begin with, but a legal joke. Okay, but say, I don't want to, joke isn't a nice term, but it's a legal fiction. It's a little bit of a trick that we have to allow because of economic reason. But like this, he sells it and then he keeps the store open. So that's ridiculous. But I'm not, thank God, nobody asked me. And they asked Rav Moshe Feinstein, who knows a million times more than I do. So Rav Moshe Feinstein said, no. Rav Feinstein said, the sale's a good sale. He's just a thief. He's a goslin. He's stealing from the non-Jew. Okay, so maybe he's selling on his behalf. So he has to take all the money from the chametz, put it to the side, and give it to the non-Jew who sold the chametz. But it doesn't nullify the sale. Okay, Beseder. So now, you had a question. We know that Kli Cheres. What's Kli Cheres? Kli Cheres is pot, or how do we change that? Earthenware? Pottery? Pottery vessels. We know the big Shiloh, right? You can't kasher China, right? Everybody knows that because it's made of earthenware. Although, you know, the famous tshuva of the Chacham Tzvi, that after 1 year, right? Bali tshuva. Rav Moshe has a tshuva about that one too. Rav Moshe was great. The tshuvas, I mean, he understood life. You know, you can't kasher China, because China's earthenware. Earthenware cannot be kashered. You have to break it and put it back together. Tanur Shalachnai, the whole Rav Elazar, you know, Lobo Shemaim, he was all about this issue, that a pot in an oven, a pottery can, when, you know, you, how do you kasher it? If it's broken a little and remade. But you can't kasher it. You can't kasher it. So China, you can't kasher. So what do you do? Your grandmother, you're a Balchuva, whatever, and you inherit a beautiful $10,000, $20,000 China set from your grandparents, but they didn't keep kosher. So what are you going to do? Throw it in the garbage? Give it to a non-Jew. You want to sell it to a non-Jew. That's what you ate. You ate the nice pork at your grandmother's house. And then you became observant and you were older. And now you inherit these beautiful dishes. So Rav Moshe, I have to look it up again, but Rav Moshe has a tshuva based on the Chacham Tzvi, that after 1 year, now you can't kasher, that's okay, we don't need it. We all know already after 1 day, there's not such a transferring taste. But after 1 year, it becomes totally allowed. Even though that tshuva is not accepted, I think, so widely, Rav Moshe said in the case of a bal tshuva, in a case of a lot of money, economics play a very important role in halacha. And if it's going to cost, that's why we sell chametz. If we're going to cost money, we can be lenient. So anyway, so here, so now you have pottery dishes. So let's go to our Gemara now. It's just eight lasot Hashem. Well, it's not exactly eight lasot Hashem, but okay, let's go. So the Gemara talks about what do you do with your pottery dishes after Pesach? They have your chametz. So fascinatingly enough, Rav was of the opinion you have to break them. You can't use pottery dishes. Your chametz dishes every year on Pesach, every year on the 23rd of Nisan, you have to go buy new pottery dishes because the ones that you used before Pesach had a bliya, had an absorption of chametz. And that absorption stays in the pot And therefore, even though b'di'eved, I guess after one day, it's nothing tamlif gam, it doesn't give a good taste. Bottom line, you're not supposed to use it. So you have to break it, and you can't kasher it. You can't kasher them. So Rav said, teirup Pesach yishaber, you have to break them. So he says, leave them till Pesach, whatever. So, okay, without getting all the details of the sugya, there's a debate. If you have to get new ones or not. That's really the debate. So the Gemara says like this. Shmuel said, don't break them. Okay, good. So Asa Shmuel Tamei, Damar Shmuel Lahanei Demazve Kandei. Ashvu Zvine Ach Naichi Be'ilav Darshina LeKarabi Shimon. Says like this, guys. The pottery makers, the dish makers, wow, they loved Pesach. They made a killing. After Pesach, the price, the demand for dishes went up through the roof. So they raised the prices, supply and demand. So Shmuel says, guys, if you don't raise the prices, I'm going to rule that there is no prohibition of using pottery dishes after Pesach. Oh, it's got chametz in it. Too bad. He says like this. I'll read it in English. Level the prices for your pots. I love how they translate. Level the prices for your pots. And if you do not bring your prices down, I will teach the halach is according to Rabbi Shimon. That's not how he held. He is how he held, actually. It's not halach is Rabbi Shimon against Rav. That one is permitted to derive benefit from leavened bread after Passover. This ruling would lead people to retain their vessels and desist from purchasing new vessels after Passover, and consequently, the merchants would lose business. Okay, whereas the whole discussion, the technical details are not important. But here you have another example of the money playing an important role, and I guess we'll end this, we'll do a trilogy, is in the first page. If you learn Hilchot Shabbos, the first four page. So where does Hilchot Shabbos begin? Anybody know? In the Shulchan Aruch. That's an unfair question. Chelek Gimel in the standard printing of the Mishnah Berurah, right? Most people learn Aruch Chaim today. Most people don't learn Shulchan Aruch anymore because everything's in English today. Like Rav Soloveitchik, I think I told you the story. Rav Schachter told us he never learned the Mishnah Berurah. Today, the Mishnah Berurah is like, as somebody once told me, is like a Tana. We consider him to be like Rabbi Akiva. Like the Mishnah Torah is like the Mishnah Berurah of the Chafetz Chaim, you know, the great Chafetz Chaim, the saintly Chafetz Chaim, has conquered the world. But 50 years ago, it was totally not true. And many parts of the world, the Lithuanian, the yeshiva world, never looked in a Mishnah Berurah. And the Aruch HaShulchan was considered a greater halachic authority. And many poskim said, follow the Aruch HaShulchan. And many, and Rav Shechter told us, Rav Soloveitchik never looked in a Mishnah Berurah. He would learn the Shulchan Aruch, the Primagadim, the Magen Avram, the Taz, the classical commentaries. It's a lot harder. The Mishnah Berurah anthologizes it. So, it, you know, makes it a lot easier and he's later. So, but for whatever, it became popular. And Rav Shechter told us he never looked at a Mishnah Berurah. But this must be the late 60s already. So he's already in his late 20s, his mid to late 20s. He's married and his wife gives him as a birthday present a set of the Mishnah Berurah. Gives a birthday present. So his wife goes, he told us the story in Shir. So his wife goes to have a baby and he didn't go in the room with her. And I guess in the 60s, nobody went in, I don't think. And so what's he going to do when he's waiting out in the hall? So he brought the Mishnah Berurah and he read it. And he told us his hair stood on edge. If you know Rav Schechter's like sense of humor, style, he's a reform rabbi. He says on every page, the Mishnah Berurah changes the psak of the Shulchan Aruch. It's true. He's usually to be more strict, but not to be more lenient. But the Mishnah Berurah says, well, there's a taz here and there's a shach there and all of this. And on the tea bags, that's one of the famous ones, right? He says, Rav Soloveitchik says, my grandfather was a very religious man. And he used to use tea bags on Shabbos. He didn't do kli shlishi and tea stand. He didn't hold from any of that. But that's from the Mishnah Berurah today. That's if you don't do that, they'll call you a mechalel Shabbos. The Mishnah Berurah conquered the world. We didn't know whole shir, why that happened, how that happened, how halachic trends were. That's not for now, but I throw that out there. So the Shulchan, but today people don't even use the Mishnah. I mean, people are influenced by Mishnah Berurah without even knowing it because everything's in English. I mean, like Baruch Hashem in Israel, where Melamed that's translated his books that have sold like a million copies. There's so much updated, which makes a lot of sense because that started with the Shmirat Shabbat Kehilchata, that genre that you put out books, modern books with modern things. That genre began with Shmirat Shabbat Kehilchata, the classic work of Rav Neuwirth printed in the 60s, top student of Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. I'm sure most of you have heard of the book, many of you, Shmirat Shabbat Kehilchata, and that's the whole genre now. Books on everything, and the arts world puts up books on everything, Hebrew, English, new. Anyway, but if you want to learn from the original, and the Shulchan Aruch, so I take the Mishnah Berurah, so the Orach Chaim, the Mishnah Berurah only wrote on the Orach Chaim, the section that deals with daily life. So the Shulchan Aruch, everything's in order. So it's, or you wake up in the morning. Orach Chaim is the order of the path of your life, Orach Chaim. So you wake up in the morning, that's where we start. What do? You have to wake up like a lion. That's the first halacha. And then Hikaber Kari to work, and then he goes through. Tzitzis, Tfilin, Brachot, Shachrit, Nesiat Kapai and Kriya Satorah, then you go eat. It's Brachot, Birchat Amazon, and then you go to bed, you Mincha, Mari, Kriyat Shmala, Almeit. It just goes through the whole day in order. Then you get to the third part, it's divided into six parts today when they print it. So, Chelek, and then we start on the holidays. So, before the holidays, like in the Torah, we start on Shabbat. And then he's going to go, well, Shabbat, we start on Friday night, and then goes through Shabbos, you know, and afternoon. And then we're going to go to Pesach. And the fast days, because Pesach, then you got the Shiva Sarba Tammuz and Tisha B'Av, then you got Elul, Rosh Hashanah, and then you end up Purim. The Orach Chaim, the Shulchan Aruch ends up Purim, because the holiday started Pesach and then Purim. We spoke about that a few weeks ago. Anyway, so the first halacha in Hilchot Shabbos, I don't know if we're going to finish Eitz Makoma today. Okay, the first halacha in Hilchot Shabbos is Friday afternoon. You have to get ready for Shabbos, Kavod Shabbos, honor. What's the difference? We have, by the way, Yontif Shabbos. So on every Shabbos, there are two halachas. The Rambam writes this very clearly. There's Zachor and Shamor v'Zachor v'Dibur Echad, right? Shamor at Yom HaShabbat, the mitzvah lo tasei. It really is, it's Zachor and Shamor. I don't know why. He put in Shamor first. I'm just thinking, why did Shlomo Alkabetz change the order of the Torah? In Yitro, it's Zachor, and Betchanan, it's Shamor. But in Lechadodi, it's Shamor v'Zachor. That's the wrong order. He did it because his name was Shlomo. And the Lechadodi have to have his name, Likrat Kala Mikdash Melech, right? Like all poets, many poets. That was very common style in the Middle Ages. Even today, I think you put your name. So he had to put Sheen. He had to start with Sheen. So he switched the order. It's poetry. Shamor v'Zachor instead of Zachor v'Shamor. Peseder. Very, very, very nice. Those are the two biblical laws. Then you have two rabbinic laws, Kavod and Onek. You have to honor the Shabbat and you have to delight in Shabbat. On Yontif, you have a third mitzvah, Simcha. There's no technical mitzvah of Simcha. Of course, you should be happy. That's why Rav Soloveitchik explained he doesn't understand the Sefar. That's why Ashkenazim don't say Yismechu b'malchutcha on Shabbos, right? We only say it at Muslim, Yismechu b'malchutcha shomer Shabbos. Because Rav Soloveitchik held, because it's his whole, he has beautiful pieces on this, that the only in the Beit HaMikdash is a place of simcha, smachtem lifnei Hashem. True simcha, Rav Soloveitchik always explained, is being in the presence of God. That's the ultimate in simcha. Smachtem lifnei Hashem shivat yamim. When you feel the presence of God, there's no greater joy in life than that. If it's a hard thing to feel. That's why Yom Kippur is the happiest day. Lifnei Hashem titar, we're in the presence of God. Sukkot, smachtem lifnei Hashem. So Rav Soloveitchik said the Beit HaMikdash brings this notion of simcha. That's why a Kohen can't come in contact with death. Can't be tamei, because death is the opposite. So there can be no death. Anybody who contacted death can't go to the Beit HaMikdash. It contradicts the notion of simcha. So in the Beit HaMikdash, there's always simcha. So therefore, on Musaf, we say, Yismechu b'malchutcha shomrei Shabbat. But the Rav Soloveitchik said he doesn't understand how Nusach Sfard says it on all the davening, the Yismechu. So he doesn't, I don't know, maybe somebody came up with some explanation, or maybe it's a mistake. You know, in the classical yeshiva world, they believe, okay, I don't want to get into this, I'm going to get into trouble, but they believe Nusach Sfard is really just mistakes, like Nusach Ash, all yeshivas daven Nusach, I'm not getting into that, but I'm just letting you know that all yeshivas daven Nusach Ashkenaz, Lakewood and YU, and they all daven Rav Moshe, they all daven Ashkenaz. Sfard was like, whatever. Anyway, so that's Yismichu, but that mitzvah of Simcha, that's why Aveilut is canceled on Yontif, but it's not canceled on Shabbat. So there's a halacha of Simcha on Yontif, but there's no halacha, no technical halacha of Simcha on Shabbat, but in Musaf, Yismichu b'malchutcha. Great. So you have Kavod on it. Okay, great. What's the difference? What is Kavod and what's on it? What's Simcha, by the way? Well, maybe we'll talk next week, whenever I give my shiur, Monday, Friday, both, I don't know. Well, Simcha. What is Simcha? I mean, what's covered? What's on it? What's the difference? So this, I believe, a famous, I think it's the Vilna Gaon, famously said this. Maybe I'm wrong, but kavod is what you do to prepare for Shabbat. You honor a guest. The Queen of England is coming. You put out the red carpet. You go meet her at the airport, and you get all the flags ready, and you clean the streets, and, you know, an important guest is coming to town. Shabbat is coming to town in Sfat, where L'chadodi comes from, where all of Kabbalah Shabbos, they went out into the field to greet Shabbat. You don't wait for Shabbat to come. You turn around, you go to the field, you welcome Shabbat. Kavod is what you take a shower before Shabbos, you all the preparations you do before cooking, how you walk into the house on Friday, right? Rav Soloveitchik used to complain all the time that in America we have Jews who are Shomer Shabbat, but we do not have Jews who are Shomer Erev Shabbat. You walk home from the law office, you get home in the winter at 3:20, 3:42, and Shabbos is at 4:21, because you know who has time to get home. He says, "We don't have Jews who are Shomer Baruch Hashem in Israel. You have Jews who are Shomer Erev Shabbat. America, it's hard." But he commented on that. You know, we don't have Jews who are Shomer Erev Shabbat. Anyways, so Kabbat is Erev Shabbat. What's oneg? Oneg is delight, enjoy it, a good meal, to sleep in a little bit, schmoozing, learning Torah. It's also oneg Shabbos, right? The karata l'Shabbat oneg. So that's the difference, kavod and oneg. So the first halach is kavod. So that's where the Shulchan Aruch begins, Mishnah Berurah. So the first page is all because of economics, right? This is our economic lesson, right? So the first page of Shulchan Aruch, they got to go shopping before Shabbos. So people used to prepare for Shabbos on Thursday because it would take so long. I mean, maybe we do too, I guess. But they did all their laundry on Thursday because laundry was a big pain to do. So you couldn't do laundry Friday. Whatever it was, they went shopping. Got the fish. So you have to go shopping for Shabbos. So the Mishnah Berurah on the first page in Hilchot Shabbos says, but if the fish prices go up, you can't buy fish. You're a billionaire? Too bad. We have to boycott the fishmongers because that was very common. They before Pesach, Friday, the fish people would have raised the price because all the Jews want to buy fish. So you don't eat fish on Shabbos, big deal. The Mishnah Berurah, actually, he's pretty, I actually think he's too, he doesn't intervene enough in the marketplace. If I'm not mistaken, I'm pretty sure the Mishnah Berurah says only if the price goes up by one third. That's a huge increase. In other words, normally the price of fish is, I don't know, what's salmon, $20 a pound? I don't know, Jackie, I don't know, it's expensive. Fish is very expensive, like meat. I buy the salmon usually. What do I pay? $25 a kilo, maybe? I don't, whatever. So if the price goes up from 20 to a third to 30, a third, so then you can't buy it, even if you're a multimillionaire. Anyways, okay, so that this is a very important notion that when it comes to economics, play a very important role. As the Gemara says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Chasa al Mamonam Shel Israel. God has mercy on the money of the Jewish people, and you're not allowed to waste money. When, you know, we do sell our chametz. We do keep the chametz in our house. We do sell it because it's better than throwing it out in the garbage. When you lived in the 1700s, there was no refrigeration. So how much chametz did the guy own? He owned $25 worth of chametz. He gave it to his next door non-Jewish neighbor. Big deal. But today, people have thousands of dollars worth of chametz in free. It's bal tashchit. You can't throw it out. You want to donate it to a food bank? That's wonderful. That's great. But not everybody can afford to donate $5,000 of their chametz, whatever, to a food bank. So we sell it. Nobody should ever like belittle somebody or a rabbi who says, oh, for money, you know, we're going to be lenient for money. That's the Torah. Eight lasot Hashem hefer Torah. It begins with the Mishnah, Rav Shimon ben Gamliel, saying we're going to nullify the Torah because the people are charging too much money. And as we're going to, I'll just now, we'll get back to the Korban Olah V'Yoreid, which the Sefer Achinuch has it's such a sharp point. So we have this Korban Olah V'Yoreid, you bring five times, right? That's what we started last week. This is where we ended off last week, right? That who are the five people? So we mentioned two already, a Metzora, when he comes, and then Isha Hayoledet. Those are the two of them. And then let's take a quick look at the other three. The other three, where do I share my screen here? The other three are grouped together. It's actually fascinating why the Torah groups them all together, these three things. So this is chapter 5 in the book of Vayikra. We read it, I don't know, 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago. V'nefesh ki techta v'shama kol Allah, v'hu eid o ra'av o yadav im lo yagid ben asav v'no. So this is the requirement here. I'll put it in English too. This is the requirement to testify to subpoena to court. If you're subpoenaed to court, even if you're not subpoenaed, you don't have to wait for a subpoena. But if they subpoena you, that's and they say, we know you know testimony, and you take an oath, and you swear you don't know. If you don't testify, you're going to bear your sin. That's actually pretty strong language. Nasa avono. The burden of sin will be upon you, like literally. Or another one, nefesh shereti gabachol davar tameh. If you touch something that's impure, a dead body or a dead animal, etc., or sheretz, a swarming a rodent, then that lami man, and you forgot about it, lutameh, and you went into the Beit HaMikdash by mistake, or you ate something. And the third one, nefesh kishtevalifatei bisvatayim. You take a promise. I promise I'm going to we'll have barbecue chicken for supper. A lot of them related to food and the Mishnah in the Dharan. And to do good or bad, and you break your promise. That's called a shvuat bitui, levatei, to express with your lips. That's a shvuat bitui. So these three sins, the shvuat ha'edut, not testifying and then denying it under oath that you know any testimony, going into the temple when you're tamei or eating something that is holy, like the Korban Pesach when you are tamei, unless everybody's tamei, and then taking violating your promise that you made that. So in all of those things, you have to bring an asham. That's why we're doing this. We're right in Ezim Akoman. So we're at the Korban Asham, which is a form of echatat. So this we have the asham mitzorah. That's how we got to this whole discussion. The Mitzora has to bring an Asham. But if he's poor, he doesn't have to bring it. He does. He still has to bring one animal instead of two. It's interesting. By the Mitzora, the drop is from three animals to one. It's very fascinating. The Torah insisted that the Mitzora always had to bring an animal. Normally, you're doing a Korban Chatat. You violate Shabbos accidentally. You ate Chametz accidentally. You bring a Chatat. The Torah couldn't care less if you're poor or wealthy. Then you have to bring, it's a Korban Kavua. It's fixed. You have to do it. So here, Bimlo Tagi Yado Deseh. You can't afford a sheep. So you bring your Asham. Shnei Torim, two Durotavs, pigeons, whatever. Okay. And then the Torah says, here you have Bimota Sigadol, the Shnei Torim, you're really poor. Or the Shnei Vanei, you can't even afford two birds. So then you bring flour, Asirit Haifa Solet. You bring a flour for a sin offering. And so this is the three tiered. The Mitzorah and the Yoledet only have a two tiered. By the way, how much is an Asirit Haifa? So I know you look in art school, all these have 43 and a half eggs. I don't know whatever it is, but I what is it in the Chumash? What's an Asirat Haifa? So an Asirat Haifa is the man that you went to eat every day. Haman is that. So I'm assuming an Asirat Haifa is the amount of flour that an average person ate on a day, because that's what the man was. You had your food for the day. And that Omer, the Omer was an Asir, and the Torah, after the whole story of the man in Beshalach, Rabbi Liptai gave a whole shiur on what Omer is, right? But the last pasuk in Beshalach there says, Omer Asirit Haifa was one tenth of, by the way, because the Torah talked, you should take an Omer. What's an Omer? I don't know what an Omer is. So an Haifa was like, I don't know, it was a common measurement. So an Asirit Haifa, so I'm assuming that's what it meant. It's a daily food. That makes sense. So when the sinner accidentally, sinner couldn't afford neither an animal nor birds, so he brought the one day's worth of food. And if he really can't afford it, he'll fast for the day. I assume that's the connection. In other words, the Torah says, okay, you can't afford birds, okay, yeah, that's fine, but you can't afford flour, you know what, you sinned. I know it was an accident, but still, accidents are all carelessness. You won't eat for a day if your mom is so poor. We don't think like this, because Baruch Hashem, we define, a poor person today maybe only has one cell phone or one car. Most people, there is real poverty, more than we think, but it's whatever. Okay. Anyways, so that's the Korban. And then why, by the way, why do these people get a special Korban Olav Yoreh? Going into the temple by mistake when you're tamei, violating an oath, not testifying in court. Why are they? Why do we have a lower korban? You don't have to bring an animal. The Torah is kind of nice to you. Anybody want to venture a guess? Nobody wants to venture a guess. Oh my gosh. Okay. Well, you should be lucky you're not my student in chat, because then I would pick on you. I'd call on you anyways. And then I'd call on somebody else. Okay. No, that's not nice. Okay. So the reason the Ramban, Nachmanides, explains, because he says, first of all, a shvuat, when you take an oath and you violate it or you don't testify, the terrible sin, but it's not karet. You're not, it's not one of the 36 sins that's called excision, like eating chametz. Why? Probably because speech in Judaism is never considered an action, right? Dibur, when we speak, it's not the same thing as doing. You know, talk is cheap. So the Torah is very strict. We have to talk very carefully. But you didn't do anything, like an action. You can cause a lot of harm with your speech and do a lot of good, but it's not an actionable offense. So therefore,
What about Edim Zaymimim?
Yeah, because they wanted to harm somebody. What's the punishment the Edim Zaymimim do to them? What they would have done through their testimony, they would have made this guy pay $1,000. Right.
Speech is actionable.
Right, only because it leads to an action. You're right, in the court of law, but the act of speech is not the same thing as an action. No, of course, it leads to an action, but it's more indirect. But yes, correct. In Eid Zomim, if you falsely testify that Reuven owes Shimon $1,000 and you're proven to be a special type of false witness, so you've got to pay. The witness has to pay what you would have done to the guy. You've got to pay $1,000. But it's still not exactly the same thing. But there is a whole discussion. Dibur Iskemas isn't right. The Gemara is a little bit, it is kind of an in-between area. And then we have this thing, what about thinking? Hearer. Is thinking the same as speaking? So that's a shaila. When you get up in the morning and you didn't say birchas, you get up in the morning, you haven't learned Torah all night. So what the first thing a Jew wants in the morning is to learn Torah. Well, what else is there to do? So that's, he's so excited to learn Torah, but he hasn't said, he hasn't washed his hands yet. He hasn't done nekevasser. So he's thinking about Torah. So are you allowed to think about Torah before, without saying Birchat HaTorah? That's no, you can be Mekil. You can be Mekil on that. You can think about Torah, not the Bracha. But that's a Shaila. That's a Balkari in the time of the Mishnah, when a Balkari, one who had a seminal emission, had to go to mikvah. Rabbi Helfgott meant just alluded to that yesterday, had to go to mikvah. So Ezra had a temporary ban. You weren't allowed to learn Torah. A Balkari couldn't learn Torah until he went to mikvah. And then he got rid of that. Because it wasn't, you couldn't daven and you couldn't turn towards it. That wasn't a good idea. But people didn't go to mikvah so much, they just stopped davening. And so he got rid of that one. So that was Ezra's takana by Balkari. So that's the question. Can the Balkari, he thinks Kriyat Shema. He can't say Kriyat Shema. Balkari Mahara, that's the Mishnah in Bracha. But this is not our shir, and you know, in this kasa, thinking, speaking, but the Ramban says it's not the same as an action. The other people have different activities. That's the Ramban. He wants to know, and therefore, those two, the Torah lowers the korban. But what about entering into the Beit HaMikdash? I like this one better. What about entering the Beit HaMikdash when you're Tameh? That is correct. That is correct. So why does the Torah give you three options? So the Ramban says, you know what? A guy who enters the Beit HaMikdash when he's Tameh, beautiful. He's going to the temple. He wants to get close to God. Yeah, he made a bad mistake. And it's even karet if we would do it on purpose. But his yearning for God is really beautiful. I think such a beautiful comment of the Ramban. He's yearning for God to go into the temple. So therefore, he made a mistake. We're not going to hit him with a rock over the head. If he can't afford it, because what's going to happen next time, he's not going to want to go. Last time I made a mistake, he's not so learned. He doesn't know you can't touch a rodent. Who knows? A rodent makes you tummy. Who knows that? Right? And what's a rodent? Right? The eight rodents, the Shmona Shratzim, right? Right? He doesn't know. So the Torah let him off lightly. No, that's what the Ramban says. Some people say there's no physical pleasure here. You don't like speaking, right? That's why Lashon Hara is considered so terrible. Lashon Hara is like a snake. The Torah compares it like one is like a snake. Why? Because a snake bites you, doesn't really get any pleasure. He's not eating food. He just injects, you know, venom into you. So what's Lashon Hara? You don't gain anything. I eat a cheeseburger. I like a cheeseburger. I happen not to, I mean, I don't know. I've never had one, but I don't like cheese. I can't, the idea of eating a cheese, I know I don't follow the Rambam. The Rambam says I'm supposed to want to eat a cheeseburger, but I don't do it because God says, what can I do? I don't want to eat a cheeseburger. I wish I wanted to eat a cheeseburger. Then that's what the Rambam says. You're supposed to want to eat a cheeseburger. So you want to eat pork, but you don't do it because I'm not supposed to want to steal, because that's not nice. But to eat pork, nothing wrong. Just the Torah said so. But anyway, but if I eat a cheeseburger, I like it. It's good. okay, I gain something. I understand such a sinner. But to speak Lashon Hara, what did you gain? We gain in other ways. You know, we feel better because he's worse than us. Of course, there's all the psychological reasons, but there's nothing. It's like speech. It's the same way. It's not a real action. You didn't mamish gain anything. That's what some want to say. But whatever it is, you're allowed to bring this korban olav yori, this up and down korban. But what I want to say is the Sefer Achinuch has such a beautiful point, which ties into what we were saying about economic intervention, how the economy is so important, money is so important in our religious life. The Sefer Achinuch says, if you're a poor person and you bring an animal, you didn't fulfill your obligation. You're not allowed to. If the Torah allows a poor person to bring flour, or to bring birds. No, to serve God, I sin. I'm going to bring an animal. I'm going to go into debt. I'm going to borrow money. I'm going to sell our car so I can bring an animal. You're not allowed to do that. The Torah says, if you're poor, do this. You're violating the Torah. Well, what do you mean? The Torah didn't say, bring Nadav and Aviah were killed. I mean, he doesn't say this, but Nadav and Aviah were killed because they brought a korban. They weren't commanded to. What in the world are you bringing an animal for? You're too poor. So it's such a powerful comment of the Sefer HaChinuch. And listen, in this generation, nobody cares about any of this stuff. But it used to be in Jewish history that they were very strict, right? The only ones who's strict today, as far as I know, is the Gerer Rebbe. I don't know if he still has the $100 Strimer rule or whatever, or 100 people at a wedding, right? How many of you, I don't know anybody in Ger, but I think you weren't ever allowed to have more than 100 people at a wedding. I don't care if you got 97 first cousins, which probably a lot of them do, and it doesn't matter. 100 people maximum at a wedding, and they put all these rules. I remember years ago, about 30 years ago, the Aguda put out rules, and everybody laughed at them. Why they laughed? Because they had a hole as big as a truck. If the rabbi feels it's important to make an exception, you know, you weren't allowed to have a chvais, more than 97 pieces in the band, and 20 $8,000 on flowers, whatever the rules were that they put in. Sorry for my cynicism a little bit. I apologize. But, you know, they did put out these rules, but they really had the hole in it the size of a truck to drive through. So the rules didn't last. But when we had strong communities, they had very strict rules about consumption. And listen, if you're wealthy, that's wonderful. That's a blessing from God. And wealth is wonderful. If you use properly, it can be terrible used improperly, but it can be wonderful, wonderful. So much good. But the Torah was always afraid of one-upmanship and showing off. And there's ways to enjoy your wealth. And yes, you should have a bigger house. I don't know where to draw the line. But when it came to these ideas, the Torah, this begins in the Torah. So the Torah having an olav yored, it's so obvious what the Sefer HaChinuch says, but we don't think like that. The Torah says, if you're wealthy, this, if you're middle class, this, if you're poor, this. I'm just, you know, I don't know however you define those terms, which is not in the Torah. So, that means you can't do more. It's very, don't spend so much. And that's really the last Mishnah in Menachem. In the last Mishnah, I think, Echad HaMarbe V'Echad HaMamit. Do I have it here? No, I don't have the Mishnah here. Okay, whatever. Whether one does more, whether one does less, doesn't matter. A flower offering can be just as great. So that's the little bit on the Korban Olav Yored, and that's to finish up the Korban Hashem. Okay, one more Hashem. So there's the Hashem Nazir. We went through the Hashem Gzeilot. We discussed that in the last couple of weeks, I think. So all this is because of Hashem Mitzorah. Two words take 2 weeks to discuss. What an Hashem Mitzorah is, you know, Hawaii brings an Hashem, and that's an Olav Yored, and you get into all the other Olav Yoreds and why, and what the Torah's meaning is in economics and Shabbos and the Mishnah Berurah and eating fish, all because of an Hashem Mitzorah. There's so much, all the Torah is interconnected. That's what they say. Kol HaTorah Kula Inyan Achar. All the Torah is one idea. Okay, Hashem Talui. This is the last Hashem. What's an Hashem Talui? A hanging Hashem. Anybody know what an Hashem Talui is, a hanging Hashem? So a hanging Hashem is if you don't know, you have two pieces of meat, and one is chaylev. Chaylev is a forbidden fat. You have to be trained very heavily in this. Chaylev and shuman, there are two fats in the animals. So some fats are in Easter karet. It's very, like, we don't think, what's so terrible? Who cares? But Torah makes a big deal about it. Chaylev, that's nikur, you know, when they have to take out the stuff from the animal. It's a big specialty. Not so many people know how to do this. And who wants to go into a career removing fat from an animal? That's, you know, being a shochet, okay, a shochet, people can eat the meat, I can hear a little bit, but to spend your life removing fat from the hind legs of a quarter of an animal, that's not such a, I don't know how many people that appeals to. Anyway, so chaylev is forbidden. It has to be removed from the animal. I think it's mainly in the hindquarters, which is why in America we generally don't eat hindquarters. It's not worth it. They just give it to the non-kosher plants. And shuman, which is a permitted fat. So you have two pieces. One is chaylev, one is shuman, and you don't know which is which. And you ate one by mistake, and you don't know which you ate. So you bring a asham to a hanging asham. And then if you find out, if and when you find out you violated sin, then you bring a sin offering, then you bring a korban chatat. So that's the sixth type of asham when you're in doubt. We don't have that normally. When you're in doubt whether you violated, now the two pieces of meat, you don't know which one you ate. It's not any doubt. Again, I don't want to get into all the technical details. It's not if you're not sure if you violated Shabbat, you don't bring in asham talui. In that case, it's, you have two things right before you. One is allowed, one isn't allowed. You don't know which one you did. That's when you bring asham talui. What's important for us and the moral lesson, so the Shulchan Aruch in Hilchot, Aseret Yemei Tshuva. The Shulchan Aruch doesn't really, you know, the Rambam, as Rav Soloveitchik said, the Rambam invented, invented is a strong word, but the Rambam basically invented Hilchot Tshuva. In other words, the Rambam has 10 chapters. What's in those chapters, it talks about free will, all kinds of things, but the Rambam came up with this notion of Hilchot Tshuva. There's only one mitzvah in the Hilchot Tshuva, Vidui, to confess. That's a pasuk in the Chumash. In chapter 5 in Vayikra, by the way, by the Hashem Zeilot. Okay, maybe I don't have, it's getting late, but if you want to go chapter 5 a little later when it talks to you steal money and then you deny it and then you admit your sin, bitvada, you have to admit your sin. That's the source. Stealing money from a convert who died. I think that's the case. The convert dies and a convert has no halachic relatives. He's not related to his parents. So his children. So his children that he had while he was a non-Jew don't inherit him. So his money is hefker. So if somebody cheated, I remember they cheated from the convert and they took his money and they denied it. I remember the exact details of the case like that. And then they swear and then they admit they did wrong. So that's where the mitzvah of vidui, to admit your sin, I think that's the source of the mitzvah of vidui. But often that we do on Yom Kippur, comes from stealing money from of the convert. That in itself is a very, very powerful idea. Anyway, so the Rambam invented Hilchot Tshuva. You look in the Shulchan Aruch, there's no section Hilchot Tshuva. You sin, you make up your sin. It's like he just, you know, unbelievable, the brilliance and creativity of the Rambam. But in the Shulchan Aruch, there's a little bit. So there's this funny halacha, right? You're in the Aseret Yemei Tshuva, you should be more strict. So how do you be more strict in Jewish law? So it's like such a funny law. Anybody know what it says in the Shulchan Aruch? So if all year you eat padakum, if all year you eat Arnold's bread, right? They still have Arnold's bread with an OU. I don't know. In Canada, we only get from bakery. I don't know, but Arnold bread still exists. Yeah. Padakum, non-bread that's kosher, baked by, or the cookies, you know, not Stella Dora. I don't know if they make those anymore, you know. Entenmann's, I don't know what, these are non-Jewish manufactured cookies, but they have an OU. They're kosher. They're made by non-Jews. We allow it. We allow it made by non-Jews. Right, there's this Pat Yisrael, you know, today that's in, you know, Pat Yisrael, Yashan, Chadash, all that stuff that didn't exist when I was a kid. But okay, Beseder. It existed, but in a different way, very different way. So during the Aseret Yemei Tshuva, you should eat Pat Yisrael. Okay, it's so like funny. Anyways, but there the Ramah has this unbelievable insight, psychological insight. The Ramah says that the Korban Asham Talui is a ram, and the Korban Chatat is a sheep. And apparently a ram costs more than a sheep, is more expensive. So he says, now we're talking people who can afford it. One who is not sure if he sinned has to spend more money than if he is sure that he sinned. Why? Because you're much less likely to do tshuva if you're not sure that you sin. I didn't really sin. Doubt. The market hates doubt. Uncertainty is the worst. Bad, okay, you can deal with it. Good, great. Uncertainty, you don't, it's the worst. It's an amazing concept. A safek avera, a doubtful avera needs more tshuva The Ramah writes, then avadai avira. It's avadai avira. You knew you did something wrong. Do you but sapek avira? That's what you got to work on. Such a powerful insight. Anyways, it's 9:56, so I'm going to skip the shlamim now because it's. I'm going to talk about, maybe we'll come back. We won't come back, but we'll see. But since the Mishnah on Eitzim Kohen ends with the Korban Pesach, so how can I not talk about that? The last Mishnah talks about Bechor, Maser, and Pesach. I'll do very, very quickly. The three, and we're going down from the highest of holiness to the sort of lowest, so to speak. So you have the Bechor, the elder, the firstborn animal you have to give to a Kohen, a sheep, your elder sheep, got to give to a Kohen. We're going to talk about that. Now, Maser, every 10th animal, you get to eat it. You have to put the fats on the temple. You have to bring the Beit HaMikdash, but you get to eat it. Maser, everybody. And then Pesach, Kodshim Kalim, they're light. Kodshim Kalim, the light holies. So what does it say about Pesach? And this is how the chapter is coming in. HaPesach eino nechal ala balayla. You have to eat the Korban Pesach only at night. Very fascinating. You're not allowed to eat it in the day. You have that by no other halacha. There's something special about night and on Pesach. We were talking before the shiur started. You have to start Seder Dafka at night. Unlike Shabbos and Yontif, you can't bring in Pesach early. The Torah says we were in Egypt for 430 years, right? I think what's the Pesach say? We were in Egypt for 430 years, right? That's what the Pesach said. The problem, we're there. 400 years, 430, okay, that's not our issue. And then we left, and the Torah says, when did we leave? The Torah says, I'm just see if I can very quickly, by Himi Kates, it says we left Egypt at night, right? The Torah makes a big deal that we left Egypt at night. By the way, the Torah contradicts itself, like, you know, often. Because, right, we left at in the middle of the day so the Egyptians can see and couldn't stop it. And then the Torah says we left at night. We left Balayla. And when did Makkah Bechor happen? Happened at midnight. The Korban Pesach is probably an act of gratitude for God saving us from the Makkah Bechor, which is why it's so important to be eaten at night, perhaps, and we don't have time to develop this, and why it has to be eaten only until midnight. The first Mishnah in Masechet Brachot, the opening Mishnah in Shas, tells us, at least according to Raman, well, you can say Kriyat Shema all night, but the rabbi said only do till Chatzot, because kedei l'archik et adam min aveira. You know, in order to go far away from sin, you tell him you can say it till 4 a.m. Okay, I'll say it later. Let me finish the late night movie. When it's over at 2:00, I'll say it. And you fall asleep in the middle of the movie and you don't say Kriyat Shema. So the rabbi says, say it before Chatzot. That's a rabbinic. And then the rabbi says, all the mitzvot that are at night, you can do all day. That's the Mishnah in Megillah. You do it all night, I'm sorry. But you should do it by Chatzot. But according to many opinions, that's not true. That Mishnah doesn't mention Korban Pesach. As an example, it mentions other examples, but not Korban Pesach. Many of the unfortunate point out because the Mishnah holds that Korban Pesach, it's a biblical law. You can't eat it after midnight. Very strange halacha. Night in Korban Pesach, night is fear and darkness, and then God's saving us, daylight. So it's very important the Korban Pesach be eaten at night and only until Chatzot, which was the moment by Hiba Chatzi Halayla, that God took us out of Egypt. So it's got to be eaten at night. It's got to be eaten at Chatzot. That's, we're assuming a there are opinions that it's only rabbinic law, but this Mishnah pretty clearly holds it's a biblical law. Can't eat it. The Afikomen, that's a rabbinic law. A friend of mine told me he was in Yeshivat Har Etzion 40 years ago, and Rav Lichtenstein invited him for the Seder, if I remember the story correctly. And, you know, they have a long Seder, Baruch Hashem, he's with Kol Amar B'Lesapar, raised them Meshubach, talking. And by the time they came to the meal, Rav Aaron looked at his watch and, oh, it's Chatzot, we have to skip the meal, we'll go straight to the Afikoman. And his wife walked in, I said, I cooked this meal for hours, you're eating this meal, don't give me Chatzot. And so he did, they ate the meal. My friend was happy. Baruch Hashem. But because that's a rabbinic law, eat the Afikoman, that's a, it's not like the Korban Pesach, though, mamash. That's why Mordechai, but maybe we'll talk about that on our Pesach Shir, how the Seder changed. Okay. Eino nechal elo l'minuyav, you got to organize in advance. Pesach, you have to prepare in advance, not just cleaning. You have to know who's eating the Korban Pesach. You have to have your group before they slaughter it. They know now chalal tzali, and that's how the Mishnah ends. It has to be eaten only roasted. Only roasted. Why? Because roasted meat is the best. That's what the Sefer Achinuch says. It tastes better. Barbecue. Barbecue is the best. You're not allowed to have any water, no, nothing. Got to be pure. You can't even use a steel skewer to roast the meat. It's got to be on, the Mishnah says, Rimon, a pomegranate branch, because it wouldn't give up any heat. Because if you heat it, if you put the meat on a skewer, like they, you know, like they do the shawarma in Israel or whatever, like there's other things like or lamb chops. I don't know, but I guess it is lamb chops or not lamb, whatever pieces. So the the steel meat heats up and that may give heat to the meat. No, got to be pure fire. So because it really tastes good. So that's the Korban Pesach. The Korban Pesach must be the best meal of the year. That's getting back. I'll end with this. That's why the Aruch HaShulchan and the Mishnah Berurah. We're talking about who's to follow. So I don't know how many people here have the custom not to eat roast meat on Pesach night. You eat boiled chicken, right? Is that what you eat? So that's the Mishnah Berurah. The Mishnah Berurah says you'll think it's a korban. The Aruch HaShulchan says no. You should eat roast meat. It's much better. You don't have to worry that you really think that chicken is the korban Pesach. Now everybody knows it's not. So the Aruch HaShulchan says you should eat meat. I follow the Aruch HaShulchan. I will et chata'ai, et mitzvotai, and the maskir hayom, right? Many people, but so that's a debate between the Mishnah Berurah and the Aruch HaShulchan of today. But without getting into that, ask your rabbi, do what your family does, whatever. But there is something, the Pesach, the Seder night is supposed to be the fanciest meal of the year. It is supposed to be. And I think that's a consideration. And when you're making the menu, that's why you have roasted lamb chops for dessert and 4 cups of wine and appetizer. Karpas is the appetizer. Discuss it. Maybe the karpas changed to something else, but karpas in the Mishnah is an appetizer for a fancy meal. So anyways, Pesach's got to be a wonderful meal. But so eat whatever. If you're a vegetarian, okay. People like vegetarian stuff, great. Okay, let's just do a very, very quick review. We sort of reviewed as we went on. We discussed money. Okay, blood on clothes. It's okay. The Kohen has blood on clothes. Like the guy sliding into second base, Lahavdil, gets his clothes dirty. We know the Kohen's working hard in the temple. Great. Doesn't have to change his clothes. And then we discussed Rav Shimon Galil changing the law. When the fish merchants raised the prices for the bird merchants raised the price for the women who were having children. So it said, you have 6 children, bring 1 korban. So you drop the price like that, 80%, 85% overnight. And it worked. And it worked. It's against the Torah. So who cares? There's a time tag for God. We have to nullify the Torah. And then we saw that on a lesser example by the Kalim after Pesach. You don't have to get rid. I'll rule if you don't lower your prices. I'm going to rule that we're going to be lenient in the laws of kashrut, of the dishes, of the absorption. And then we saw the Mishnah Berurah, the first page. You can't spend too much money, even if you're a billionaire. Obviously, if the rich people spend and the poor don't, it's not a boycott. It's got to be across the board. Okay, and then we continue talking about the Korban Ola V'Yored, and you can't spend more. If the Torah says spend less, you spend more. You can't spend more. The Torah, that's what the Sefer Chinuch writes. Why these 3 meets what? With speech, right? Not testifying, going to the temple when I'm Tameh, and what's the other one? And a false oath, right? So the 2 of them are speech. Maybe it's lesser, no karet. And of course, they're going into the temple, you were coming close to God, even if you made a mistake. We're not going to punish you, so to speak. We're going to make you bring a much lesser korban. Some say, because I didn't say this before, some say because these sins are so easy. I think the Sefer Chinuch says it's impossible not to. It's so, most people don't know Tumah v'Tara. That's what I'm saying. It's so hard that the Torah, it's like I say, we did, and speech. It's easy not to eat kosher. It's next to impossible not to talk Lashon Hara, not to say things faulty. The Gemara says that. It's impossible. So these sins are so common, the Torah wanted to give us a little bit of an out. And then we just discussed it with Asham Talui, if you're not sure, because a suffix, a doubtful sin requires more tshuva than a known sin, because you're not, I don't know that he sinned. Doubt is never good. And then we ended a little bit on the Korban Pesach. Okay, and how you have to eat it, and it's different, and the Israel of the year. Okay, so I think I'm going to do, I'll send it an email. I hope people will come. Please, God, Monday at 11 a.m., which we've had a share the last few weeks, Rabbi Kowalski is Monday at 11 a.m. on the Haggadah, Insights into the Haggadah. And if people really come, I really am happy. I have permission from the house to give a shiur next Friday at 9 o'clock in the morning. So if people want to come, even if I understand many people can't come, and there obviously won't be a continuation of this, I'm happy to give a shiur next Friday too.
9 to 9:30.
It would be 9 o'clock next Friday, I think. You tell me.
9:30 start.
9:30 starts after Pesach.
Oh, okay.
After Pesach. And then Friday after that is already Yontif. So for sure we won't be a shiur then. I don't know yet. We'll be on Chol HaMoed. Maybe we'll have a shiur on Chol HaMoed. Just watch your emails. And I appreciate all who come. And I just think it's nice to learn before Pesach, and I'm always, I never like to, you know, cancel Torah, but I understand, of course, people are very busy, but so you can do extra stuff. And as I mentioned, in 2 weeks, we're going to start the shiur at 9:35. I'm teaching till 9:30, so I need sort of 5 minutes. I say 9:30, but just I need, you know, to open my computer and whatever goes. So I hope that will be fine, please God. Okay, and we'll send out pretty soon our post-Pesach like program. Right now, I think we have 11 classes coming up, a bunch of new classes, and thank you very much. Okay. Oh, any questions? I didn't quickly check. I'm sorry. I didn't look.
Got a minute?
I'm sorry?
I got a couple of questions.
Sure.
Next Friday night, we daven Kabbalah Shabbos at 7 o'clock now. Could we daven next week at 7 o'clock as well? Does Marav have to be after sunset?
Not really. No. It's only the Haggadah. Only the Seder. As a matter of fact, if you remember, when I was rabbi at Beit Jacob, that's one of the things I did. We davened right after Shkia, Mariv. So, but by the time everybody got home, because it was so late, so we can daven Mariv after Shkia. So let's say we daven Mariv at 8:10. Nobody's going to get home before 8:45. And they said hello at Beit Jacob. That's another, you know, different people do say hello, don't say hello. So it's a long davening. So yes, you can for sure daven. You could even probably daven like on a normal Friday night, even without worrying about Shkia. But you should probably wait till, if you're asking me, no, ask your rabbi. But if you're asking, you were asking me before, I would say you could start the, if you're concerned, you have little kids or older people, it's hard to stay up, it's really late. So, and you want to wait till Seder, you want to do what's, you know, the more proper thing. So you can rely on the opinions that Seder starts, you know, 13 and a half minutes after their sunset, the opinion of the Vilna Gaon. That's 3/4 of a meal is 18 minutes. That's the 18 minutes like matzah, it's all connected. You have to take matzah within 18 minutes because a meal, it's the amount of time it takes to walk, 2,000 amot. So that's a question, when is Seder HaKochavim? So Rabbeinu Tam holds it's very late. But the Vilna Gaon holds is much earlier. So, and he holds 3/4 of a meal. So, long to that, different opinions, a complicated area of halacha. But this is an area, the same way we're very lenient when it's a lot of money. If the kid's going to fall asleep at the Seder and you can get an extra 25 minutes in, I think that's a good idea. If nobody cares, if everybody goes to bed at 3 o'clock anyways every night, so might as well wait half an hour after Shkia to get home from shul, if that makes any sense. Okay. Somebody asked me in the chat box, although, many shul's constitutions say they will be subject to Orthodox halacha set out in the Shulchan Aruch. That was in the Beit Jacob constitution where I was the rabbi and Zev was the treasurer of the shul. And they had in their constitution, we follow Shulchan Aruch. And when I first read it, I started laughing because anybody who knows anything, who's really studied halacha, I mean, if you wanted to find the Shulchan Aruch, it's all its commentaries, blah, blah, blah. Yes, but everybody knows we don't follow the Shulchan. I mean, we do, but like Rav Schachter said, the Mishnah Berurah, his hair stood on edge. Every page, we change it. That's why there's so many commentaries. We don't follow. And that's why people don't study the Shulchan Aruch so much anymore. They study all these modern books. They're easier. They're written in more accessible language. But we really have changed. The Shach says, we don't follow the Shulchan Aruch here. So if you mean Shulchan Aruch, Rav Yosef Karo, and you put it in the Constitution, yes, then that's almost, I don't want to say it's a joke, but it's for sure not true. But I think when Shul of Constitutions say we follow the Shulchan Aruch, they don't mean the Shulchan Aruch per se. They mean, you know, halacha is developed. The Shulchan Aruch is sort of just a symbol of Jewish law. But I agree, if I was writing a constitution, I would not put in that language because I don't think it's accurate enough. And if you ever had to go to a court of law because the shul fired the rabbi because the rabbi did something against the Shulchan Aruch, and the court might rule, you know, Shulchan Aruch, where the rabbi's saying, you know, we don't follow the Shulchan Aruch here, the standard practice, not follow Shulchan Aruch. So you can get into problems. And I know that sounds ridiculous, but I don't have to tell you that rabbis have gotten fired for much lesser things and whatever. Okay. Speaking of economics, somebody writing privately, being part of the Jewish community and especially the Orthodox community is very expensive. Yes, a big problem. Have them saying, yeah, it's correct. It's terrible. It's terrible. And day school is, yeah, that's why I'm talking about it. Yeah. I don't know what the solutions are not simple. Life is expensive. But yes, we have to be more cognizant. And I think part of it are these weddings. And it's hard. It's very hard. And you get caught up whatever and spending money. It's a big problem. I have to talk about another play. Eifa is about a bushel, 22 liters. Okay. Okay. Well, somebody asking me privately, why did it not exist for all of the korbanot? Yeah, so that's a great question. I have to think about it a little bit. Why? I mean, I sort of have an approach, but let me think about that. I'll try to mark that down. Why we don't expand the Korban Olevia rate? Okay. And are women today allowed to be the specialized animal shul? I'm not sure what the question is. Oh, yes, of course. Oh, to take out the chelev. That's an interesting question. I don't think there's so many men to do it. Is there any reason? A woman, absolutely, there's no reason. A woman can be a shochet. Okay, that would create controversy, but it's 100% clear that a woman, of course, is kosher to be a shochet. Rav Moshe Feinstein, back to Rav Moshe again, has a very fascinating, relatively famous tshuva about, can a woman be a mashgiach, a mashgicha? And the case was that a man died, and the woman needed parnasa. And a friend of mine called me this week. So my wife said, I want to talk to Jay. She said, no, I'll ask you all my questions about Hilchot Pesach. So she asked Ilana the questions, but asked me, Machmer, and this, that. So, okay, Beseder. We know the woman often answers, even the whatever, asked the Mashgicha. So Rav Moshe said, yes, she can be the Mashgicha. Rav Moshe was bothered by a problem that's the problem on women rabbis, women presidents. Rav Moshe held like the Rambam. Most people don't hold like the Rambam. The Rambam has this notion, this gets into all the controversy today, that a woman, the Torah says you have to have a melech. Now, maybe the Torah allows a malkah too. Torah just says, sam tasim malach melech, you should appoint a king. Okay. A king could be not for sure, does a king mean a male? I mean, a king means a male, but the Torah may not be saying male, not a female, it just means a leader, a king. The Sifri, the rabbinic midrash says melech below malka. You can't have a queen as the leader of the Jewish people. We don't have kings either. That whether we should have kings, Barbara Noah says we shouldn't. It's really a concession. Torah really doesn't want kings at all. Whatever it is, the Sifri says you cannot have a queen. Okay, you can't have a queen. The Rambam extends this. The Rambam writes, not only a king, a queen, but any position of communal authority can't be held by a woman. So this is the basis of all the stuff that goes on today, why women can't do this, all based on the Svara. Women can't have authority. So many people say, very nice, the Rambam holds, lots of things the Rambam holds. We don't paskin like every Rambam. So most people don't hold like the Rambam. Rambam is really a dat yachid, but it's in certain circles, it's popular. Rav Moshe held like the Rambam. But Rav Moshe was a tremendous posek and a tremendous understanding and tremendous chesed and all kinds of amazing things. Rav Moshe was such a tzaddik, such an amazing person, and really had insight and always looked to help people. So Rav Moshe gave a whole excuse why it's not authority, why the mashgichas doesn't have authority. Same thing, why many people say a rabbi doesn't have authority. The president of the shul has much more authority than the rabbi. Depends on the shul. In a Lubavitch shul, the rabbi has an authority. In other shuls where the board runs the place and they give the rabbi a contract and don't renew his contract, they do renew his contract, what authority does the rabbi have? The rabbi's not an authority. He's just an employee, right? That depends on the shul. So Rav Moshe has a whole hat there that why a woman can be a mashgicha. And the truth is, anytime you go to eat at somebody's house, I mean, today, the modern world, sometimes the men cook, but I don't know. And I still think most of the woman cooks more than the man. The woman's always a mashgicha. But Rav Moshe, of course, meant it on a professional level. And of course, he allowed it. To take off the fast from the helmet, nobody would even know. I don't see any issue. Okay. I think that's it. Okay, so please God, I'll send them an email. Please God, if you can make it on Monday morning, we'll talk about the Haggadah. If you have any questions, comments, happy to discuss. There's lots to discuss on the Haggadah. So if anybody has a specific thing you would like me to discuss, I'm happy to do it. Otherwise, please God, we'll see Sunday morning, Rabbi Liebtag, talking about how Tehillim. Tehillim Kuf Hei and Kuf Vav is a commentary on Magid. Then please God, I'll give me share Monday at 11. Tuesday, Rachel Sharansky Dansker is finishing her series on Tuesday, and Wednesday, Moshe Sokolov is finishing his series. And I don't know what we're going to do on Thursday. I'll let you know. Thursday night, I thought we'll have a shiur. It's Bidikat Chametz. So maybe we'll do something earlier in the day. We'll let you know. When do we start? Please, God, we start at 9:35, 2 weeks today. Next week, 3 weeks today. Next week is Erev Pesach. Maybe we'll have a shiur 9:00 for those who want to come. I hope no one's upset if I give a shiur. People who can't come, you can listen. I don't want anybody to get upset, but if those who come, maybe we can do something, special. 2 weeks is Yontif, and 3 weeks today, please God, we'll start continuing on the Siddur at 9:35. Okay, does that make sense? Any comments, questions, criticism?
Question.
Yes. Thank you very much. Shabbat shalom, everybody, and be well. And don't clean too much for Pesach. You have to enjoy Pesach, he said last week. You don't have to turn your fridge upside down and this and this. That's what we have Bitul Chametz for. You have to clean a little, but don't go crazy. The halacha is so much more. Halacha understand we're human beings. All of you, be normal. Don't. I'll tell you one last thing. Rav Schechter told us. You know how that's the famous thing. You know, Rabbi Slifkin has a whole piece on this. He gets so upset about this. The size of the olive, right? Everybody knows when this age group. I mean, most of the people here. Let's say, you know, we don't have too many people under 20. You know, the size of the olive. How much matzah did you eat as a kid growing up? A little bit of matzah. Today they bring home, you know, church, and it grows 8 by 10 inches, 17 by 15 inches. Got to eat matzah, and you have to eat it now within 4 minutes. So I remember Rav Schechter told us, you have to eat a kazaik with the achila press. That's what, you have to eat an olive, and the side you eat a press is like a half a meal. Like in the time it would take you to eat a meal. So how long do you eat a meal for? So the chumrah is 9 minutes today, 2 minutes, 4 minutes. So yeah, Rav Schechter said it means to eat normal. You have to eat a small amount in a normal amount of time. You have to fresh food into your mouth. Thing. And he told us, I think I mentioned, for his father-in-law was a Rosh Yeshiva in Telz, I believe. So he said that they had the Pesach Seder, 5 Rosh Yeshivas were at one Seder. They had one matzah for everybody for the bracha. The guest guy running the Seder makes a motzi. You know, you count out a piece of the matzah, everybody. 5 Rosh Yeshivas ate from one piece of matzah kazayit. That was enough. Today, the kazayit is grown. Okay, whatever, that's Chaim Soloveitchik's article, all kinds of reasons why this has happened. But that, you have to know what's halacha. If you want to do a spring cleaning, the Seder, but don't blame it on halacha. It's not halacha, it doesn't require it. Halacha requires some cleaning. Bedikat chametz, it requires. Bitul chametz, absolutely. But we sell our chametz. We are mevatel our chametz. You don't have to go crazy. Okay, that's, anyways, sorry about that. Okay.
Rabbi.
Yes, Mr. Zucker, what do you want to ask?
Two questions. Firstly, a certain type of offering you bring for having broken a promise. I'm not sure the exact words.
Yes, that's the Korban Ola Biorit. If you're wealthy, you bring an animal. You bring a sheep. If you're middle class, you bring 2 birds. And if you're poor, you bring some flour, a day's worth of flour, a siretif of flour. Yeah, that's the 3 things for a false oath, not testifying when you know testimony, and entering the temple by mistake when you're artame, when you're
are you distinguishing between a promise and an oath, or the 2 different
things? Yes, I didn't carefully do that, but there is in halacha, there's a difference between what we call a shvua and a neder, and there are 2 masechton and shash, nedarim and shavuos. And shavuos is nothing to write. Shavuot is an oath, a neder, I forget, one's a vow, one's an oath. What's the difference? A neder is when you forbid an object to yourself. A shvua is when you forbid yourself to do something. So here we're talking about a shvua. So a neder means like this. You learn Masechet Nedarim. It says like this. If you don't lend me, if you don't give me this $100, all of your produce is forbidden to me, or I forbid your produce, you to benefit from my product. That's how people did. What you have is forbidden to me, or what I have is forbidden to you. So it's based on an object. This chocolate bar is forbidden to me because of this. And it's usually if a condition happens. That's a neder. Masech Nedarim is in Seder Nashim. Interestingly enough, we can't discuss that now. Why? Masech Shavuos, an oath. An oath is I swear that I will do this. I swear I'm going to eat something. And then I don't eat it, or I swear I won't eat it. You want to go on a diet. So you take an oath. I swear I'll never have a piece of cake. I take an oath. And then you have a piece of cake. So that's a shvuat bitul. You have to bring a korban. Even if you did it on purpose, you have to bring, that's a korban olevi arayt. Right? So that's a shvua. So that's the Torah we're talking about, a shvua bitul, when you promise you're not going to do something. But the halacha does distinguish, and a shvua is worse. To violate a shvua, that I promise I won't do something, is considered a much more severe sin than saying, this chocolate bar is forbidden to me. If you don't come back by 4 o'clock, you can't have any of my chocolate bar, right? You tell your kid, if you don't come back by 4 o'clock, then you can't have snack tonight. I'm going to make a nether. You're not allowed. So that's a nether. If you know this is forbidden to you. That's a much lower prohibition than a shvua, where you swear to do something, so to speak.
So God promises, she made it, God promises his mother, he'll do his homework before going out.
So then the question is, what makes something into an oath? Right.
Yes.
So that just because you say you're going to do something doesn't turn it into a shvua. Right. It's got to have a certain language to be a shvua. But we add Bali Neder. It's usually really a Bali Shvua. If you want to be technical about it, yes, Bali Neder really should usually be, I'll do this, Bali Shvua. But that's not a violation of a Shvua.
Okay.
There's another mitzvah, Motzei Sfatecha Tishmor. Whatever comes out of your mouth, you should keep. That's a nice thing to do.
Yes.
I say, I'll meet you, but that's not a Shvua. A Shvua, you take a real oath in court. There are different types of Shvuot. But no, just saying something doesn't turn it into a Shvua.
Thank you. Also something else. You said statements, just a pure statement, is not actionable. But surely on the books, there's certain statements, cursing, I don't want to say it even, it's statements, there's a death penalty for it.
Cursing God, that's the one exception.
Or cursing your parents,
I believe. Or your parents, that's right. That's
just a statement.
You're right. So that's why the discussion, D-Board, does have some connection. That is correct, yeah.
There's
nothing, but it's not the same. The Ramban is distinguishing. It's not exactly the same as an action. Okay, I didn't want to get a whole, where do you draw? Right, but it's a little bit different. You're right. You're correct.
Okay, thank you.
Zev, you wanted to ask something?
Yeah, honey on Pesach. But if you have a bottle that says kosher but doesn't say kosher on Pesach,
I don't know these things. I don't know. I assume honey, I'm not in the kosher business. I assume honey's kosher, and you don't need hashgacha. But don't ask me.
I don't mean hashgacha. It's God says kosher, but doesn't say
I understand. Doesn't need special. Basically, I'll just say one thing. I'm not. I don't know this. That's a. But if right milk. Remember, right? There are people who buy milk before Pesach. Why? What's the issue? Because I know vitamin D is some chametz. I don't know the whole story there. But the halacha is that chametz before Pesach can be nullified. Only on Pesach it can't be nullified. So the minutest amounts of chametz on Pesach are nullified. A schmidgen of bread falls into a 50,000 liter barrel of soup. The whole thing is prohibited on Pesach. Chametz is aser b'mashu, in the smallest amounts, 1 in 10,000, doesn't matter. But if it's done before Pesach, if before Pesach a little bit of bread fell into the soup and it's batel, it's nullified, 60-1, whatever, then you can eat it on Pesach. Chametz is not null. So I assume all these products like honey and flour, all these things that really have no chametz to begin with, and even what's the outside chance they have any chametz, like 1 in 1,000, it's batel, it's nullified, because as long as you buy it before Pesach. If you buy it on Pesach, so that's why some people, the minag used to be, I think growing up, people would buy milk without a special hashgacha. They would buy milk before Pesach, because once they couldn't buy it on Pesach. If they bought it on Pesach, it has a little chametz in it, it's a problem. But if you buy it before Pesach, got a tiny smidgen of chametz, it's not a problem.
Okay, go online to the OU website, they have a list of things that do not require.
Right. There are lots and lots of things that don't. Thank you, Judy.
Don't require. And I think the OK has that also in the Star K too. I'm not sure, but I know the OU has it in its booklet.
The COR also has it in Canada.
Yeah, probably.
The COR has a long list of things you can buy without a special. There are things you can buy without hashgacha at all. You don't need hashgacha, period. And then there's stuff you can buy for Pesach that add a hashgacha that it's kosher, but it doesn't need a special Pesach hashgacha. And then you got all the special Pesach hashgacha. Okay. All right.
We have an interesting situation here because I essentially have 4 pieces of bread in my house right now. That's all the chametz I ever have because my husband's gluten intolerant and we don't have chametz in the house.
Cool.
And what is so frustrating is that nobody, there's a kidney oat problem perhaps, but nobody
kidney
is willing.
Sure about to, kidney oat is about to be rough. I don't know why. The whole problem with kidney oil, that's Zev Elo gave a share in that. That's a whole other share. But you look in the Shulchan Aruch, if you have 49% kidney oil and 51% non-kidney oil and it happens on Pesach, you can eat the food. Ashkenazim can eat the food. Because kidney oil is a minach from the 11th century. What's kidney? I mean, people, so whatever. But for reasons that I don't fully understand, people don't rely on this, like kidney oil batal barov. Like if you throw a little bit of rice into the whatever, I don't know, and then it's...
Well, in Israel, with the quote-unquote mixed marriages, I think...
That's a different halacha. What are you doing then? Maybe you can eat kidneyot in a mixed marriage, right? Right. But for sure, right? People are making, for sure, the halacha is kidneyot. You don't need 60 or right? It's just rov. It's batal b'rov because it's not chametz. Everybody is not chametz.
For all of us gluten free households, I wish some rabbi would. My husband spoke to a few people who said, yeah, it's probably okay, but.
Right, people are afraid to say things.
So, right, I know. There are more important
I'll end with this. Somebody said, where did I see it this week? And it's so true. The hardest mitzvah for a rabbi is lo taguru mifnei ish. The pasuk in the Chumash to a judge, when you issue a halakhic ruling, it's a pasuk in Varm. Lo taguru mifnei ish. You're not allowed to be afraid of anybody. And that's why the Lithuanian minhag was we argue even on the Shulchan Aruch. And as Rav Schachter told us, Rav Yosef Karo was also an ish. Lo tagur mifnei ish. If you're now, if I come up and the Shulchan Aruch says, oh, I'm probably wrong. Okay, I'm not, have to have a little bit of chutzpah to say I can argue on the Shulchan Aruch. But if you're Rav Moshe Feinstein, and Rav Moshe Feinstein, that's his introduction to Rav Moshe, I'm going to argue on people greater than me. I'm going to argue on the Nodbi Huda, I'm going to argue on the Khatam Sofer. The Shulchan Aruch is less, but even that is done. People do argue, because if you are convinced you're right, you're not allowed to follow other opinions. And I read this week, one rabbi said that's the hardest halacha for a rabbi to follow.
It's interesting.
Post-sake, because we're of your faith, political calculations, what's going to do, people won't accept it. It's very sad. But a rabbi has to be fearless. A post-sake, and Rav Moshe was a fearless post-sake. Rav Moshe had some very artificial insemination. They went crazy what he said.
I remember that.
Yeah, they wanted to kill him. I mean, Rav Moshe never backed down. He was, you know,
he
fearless.
Backed down from that.
That's why he was a great posek. That's why he's a great. So I agree.
But
many of our rabbis.
He backed down from the artificial insemination.
I'm sorry, he never backed down from artificial insemination. Rav Moshe allowed a woman to be artificially inseminated with the sperm of not her husband, AID, as opposed to AIH, artificial insemination donor. And he was, to say he was criticized is an understatement. And Rav Moshe felt if there's no physical intimacy, there's no problem. There's no gila rice. It's not a problem. And
That wasn't the issue. The issue was whether two siblings would end up marrying each other.
That's a different question. So the question was, when you adopt a kid, what should you use? What sperm? That has nothing to do with
it. But you don't know what sperm.
Yeah.
Orphan.
That's a. Anyways, that's a posik lo tagur mifnei ish. You're not allowed to be afraid of anybody. And the great question, I'll have that. Anyways, it's late.
You got me started. One more thing. Yeah.
I know anybody can leave. I'm sorry?
What's the root of the word matzah? What does matzah mean?
I have no idea.
Okay, it comes from mem. It's mem tzadi tzadi. It means to suck out.
Right, to suck out. Think so. It's correct. I'm sorry?
You see? Like a baby's motzeitz, you know,
the
100%. Pacifier.
Yeah, okay.
Right. So I'm just laughing because people just don't know the answer to that question. And it's so, I didn't know till this week. So anyway.
By the way, good to ask a question now because when I'm teaching, basically it's a long story, but I'm also teaching. I have a break, but I start teaching on Fridays at 10:45. So I'm up from 9:30 to 10:45. So I won't be able to go so long.
I have to get
a haircut before Shabbos. I have instructions to get a haircut before Shabbos.
Thank you.
Everybody be well.
Shabbat shalom, everyone.
We'll give a shiur Monday at 11 a.m. in the morning. And everybody be well. Shabbat shalom. All the best. Thank you very much.